You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours.
Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour.
What's up?
Good to see you.
Yeah, buddy. What do you know?
Man, I feel like we are getting closer and closer to the greatest time of year. We got deer season right around the corner, duck season right around the corner. There's a little bit of a crisp in the air the last couple of mornings. In the morning.
Where do you live? You don't live where we live, dog.
I do.
Lies.
I do. I didn't say there's a crisp.
It is hot as Hades.
At 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I said in the mornings.
Dude, when I was at the gym at 6 in the morning yesterday, it was already hotter than it needed to be.
Yeah, but it's cooler than it has been.
I guess.
It's still like 90 whenever I leave here at night.
That's what I'm saying. And you leave in the morning. Like, I don't know what this guy's like. I love the fact that he's trying to paint this picture, but man, it's a picture of lies.
No. No. You just don't have enough imagination.
We're already starting the episode on lies. Not a good start.
Man, I'm excited this week. I don't just have to talk to you.
Thank goodness.
An hour.
Thanks goodness.
We finally have another guest here inside the Outdoor Hour. We got a good one. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's get this going.
Let's do it. This is the Outdoor Hour. Glad you're with us. I am Taylor Maples.
I just shot a bear.
I did.
Never gets old.
Never does.
My favorite part. That handsome gentleman in the hat is Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
Yep. So good. So good.
I love it. Matty Goldfish, the mastermind on the ones and twos.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love
the goldfish.
That's it.
Crispy.
And then we got something special this week.
We do. We've got a guest this week. On the phone line, driving down the highway, I assume in the bayou this time. On the phone from Duck Camp Dinners, help us welcome the one and only chef, Jean-Paul Bourgeois.
Yeah, that hits. That slaps. That feels good.
Bro, y'all had me laughing with those intros, man. That was great, dude. Like, God, I need to get something like that on Duck Camp Dinners.
Hey.
I was keeping back from chuckling out loud.
Hey,
Goldfish's services can't be provided for the right price.
Yeah, that's right. Goldfish is a contractor when needed, you know? So the mastermind.
Here's
Goldfish,
my one thing.
Let me get your number after this, dude. Let's link up, see if we can get you some more work.
All right, sounds good to me.
Love that. Here's the problem, though, JP. It is all downhill from here.
Yeah, man, that's disrespectful to our guest, Taylor. Like, normally I would agree with you, right? It's just the two of us, and who knows what's going to happen. But
we put together a real solid 3 minutes of radio each week. The problem is we've got an hour-long time slot, so...
Oh, so far I'm digging it, man. I'm tuning. I feel like I might be a lifer after this. Just to hear y'all kind of banter in the first couple minutes was entertaining enough.
Well, I appreciate that. We certainly know how to bust each other's chops. It's nice to have a guest on the show with us and give us some real substance to talk about. So why don't you take a couple of minutes here and introduce yourself? Give us some of your background for someone maybe who doesn't know who you are or what you do or what Duck Camp Dinners is. I have learned over the years that I'm really bad about introductions, so I've just started turning them over to you. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, Jean-Paul Bourgeois here. I'm the host and creator of Duck Camp Dinners, and that's been a show that now we're on our third season, kind of episodes dropping every week currently, and trying to get a season four together. It was kind of started as a passion project of mine, just wanting to tell an authentic story about the Louisiana outdoors, its culture, and its duck camps, and it really snowballed into a really awesome season three, some partnerships with Meat Eater along the way. But I'm a classically trained chef from Louisiana. I've spent a lot of time in big cities like Napa, San Francisco, New York City. But I'm a Louisiana native currently living in Florida. So to your point about crisping the air, as funny as that is, it was so hot this last month. But in this week, I've been feeling a little crisp in the air, and I can feel teal season coming on us and all that good stuff. So I hear you.
See?
On that, I'm with you. But no, that's, you know, without getting too deep into the weeds here, we created Duck Camp Dinners because we thought that in a large way, I felt in my heart that Louisiana need better representation about authentic storytelling and content, long form content specifically, about the state, and it's developed into now its third season, like I said. That still continues to be the goal. We can do season four. I think season four will be the first time we start experimenting outside of the state of Louisiana, because I really believe what I've learned in these last three seasons is that there are thousands of people around the world that have their own quote-unquote duck camps. Could be duck camps, could be pheasant camps, could be salmon camps. And I think those are really compelling stories that I'm excited to tell at some point. But right now, enjoying the ride, telling the story of Louisiana, my home state, the place that I love and the people that I love.
I love it. I love it, JP. Why are you in Florida? Did you move there?
Yeah, man. I moved to Gulf Breeze, Florida, just a couple months ago.
Sick.
And while my son's still 2.5, my wife and I have always been a little nomadic, and we've always rented homes ever since, you know, the early years of leaving college. So it was easy for us to kind of think of ourselves in another way of, like, we just wanted to live by the beach and live real coastal for at least 2 years. And so I'm here, you know.
I love
and
that.
I do a lot of work. Yeah, I do a lot of work with Louisiana Cooking Magazine as well, which is stationed out of Birmingham.
Yep.
And so it's a quick, you know, a quicker drive for me from Pensacola to Birmingham to do work with them. And so, like, really, I live in Louisiana. I live in Florida. Before that, I lived in Texas. Before that, I lived in New York City. But 90% of the work I do is in and around Louisiana, really diving into the culture I grew up with.
I love that, man. I love that. I can't even remember how you and I crossed paths, but I feel like it's been years.
SHOT Show.
There it is. That's right. I ran you down at SHOT Show when you walked past me, isn't right?
That's right. You were working at the Mule Deer Foundation booth, I believe.
Well, I was just there for MDF, making rounds, doing my thing. That's right. That's right. That's awesome, man. Well, obviously, you know, you got to have partners, right, to tell this story well, as you've already discussed. You know, what you're trying to undertake is something bigger than one person can do themselves. So who are some of those brands that you've aligned with to help get this story out and share the message?
Yeah, I mean, some have been the same throughout the year. Some have been different every year. You know, Yeti and Mossy Oak, they really stepped at the plate for season one, which was a grassroots bootstrap production. We didn't know what was going to happen for season one. That really got the attention of Meat Eater, like I said, and Meat Eater took on season two and executive produced that, you know, with me kind of at the creative helm for it. which was great. It was kind of a turning point, a landmark time in my career making content to really partner with them on season two. End up shooting Timber Tour with them as well the next year. And then season three, I went kind of outside of the scope of Meat Eater, and we didn't pursue another partnership for season three. And that's where things really, you know, really turned up when it came to our brand partnerships. Explore Louisiana, who's essentially the Louisiana Office of Tourism, really came in big for season three and supported the show. I mean, the show checks all the boxes about Louisiana tourism. In fact, you know, I want more people visiting Louisiana, spending their money, going hunting, fishing, going to music festivals, eating the food there, doing the tours, the swamp tours. Like, honestly, like that's a big driving force for me, is getting people in our state and spending time there, especially outside of New Orleans. So that was a big opportunity to partner with the state in that way. Boss Shot Shells have again really stepped up big for season three. We're going to be working with them again in season four. Slappy Mama Seasoning, which is, you know, one of my favorite, went off the road a little bit. One of my favorite, you know, Cajun spices and topical blends and marinades. And they've been around for a while. Again, I've always looked at brand partners as I looked around the duck camp. In fact, I had this call with one of my best friends the other day, Jay Schneider, who's in the show. I said, man, when you look around the duck camp, the fishing camp, like your garage, what are those people that you see? Like, those are the people that I look to partner with. Is if we use them in a show, if we use them in our everyday life as being a Louisiana outdoorsman at the hunting fishing camp, then those are the people I want to be talking to, because there's no other brand that fits seamlessly and organically into our lives than ones that we already use. And hopefully they see a lot of value in that too. So far, we've gotten pretty fortunate with having great partners like that.
That's terrific. How does this organically fit in your life? Did you grow up in the outdoors doing this? Who were you with? I see it looks like your dad did a little bit of competitive cooking himself at one point. How did this all begin for you?
My dad started taking me duck hunting at a young age, around 7, 8 years old. So when I started going with him, you know, every time he'd ask me to go, I went, as far as I can remember. Those are really like the, even when I think about all the great duck hunts that I've been on before, those are the ones that really still continue to stick in my mind. Those before I was even 10 years old. You know, so he really fed that part of me. My mom and dad were great cooks both. Mom cooked every day during the week. My dad cooked on the weekends, is still considered a really great cook in the community. And I think growing up in Louisiana, you just naturally grow up around great cooks, especially great male cooks, when I was growing up, that was just second nature to be around, like, really strong men in the outdoors that knew how to cook really well. I thought that was the norm, not the exception. And later finding out, like, that really was the exception for most kind of regional American cultures, so to speak. So, you know, those, obviously that has played a big part. Those things just funneled down into where I am today. And I've really kind of honed those skills of being a cook and a chef, and honed my skills of being a creative. I love being creative in the kitchen, but I really love being creative in long format video more than anything, because it brings it. I'm able to combine all those things that I love in a creative way into one digestible format, audio video as shown on TV, and hopefully long format. And so I'm able to be like the chef and the cook that I grew up being and love being in duck camp dinners. And I'm also able to be that little boy still that gets excited about going duck hunting, waking up at 4 a.m. when it's 30 degrees and got a stiff north wind. Like, those things still get my heart pumping, get me excited before I go to bed at night, just to be able to do those things and to better combine them in a format that is able to talk about people, culture, conservation, environment, music, all those things. I don't know. It's just like the ultimate creative palette for me to work in, so to speak. And so all those things, like from being a little boy, duck hunting, from cooking with my mom and dad, that all led to, and all my work in New York City with Meat Eater, all those things, it all lead me to this place where I can combine all those loves and passions of my life into one piece of art, if you will. And then, honestly, like most people, I honestly consider duck camp dinners an art form because I know how hard I work on it, how hard Daniel Bagby and Mitch work on it. I see that as like, we're all coming together, like not just the great, like just really great episodes, but combining a bunch of different art forms into it. And that's why, I always talk about music, and it's a part of the budget that people wish I didn't have because I devote a lot of money to music in the show because I go out and search Louisiana musicians, pay them for their music per episode, and because that's meaningful to me to get that art form out there through the audio and video component of Duck Camp Dinner. So I'm rambling, but that's, you know, everything I've done has led me to this. I just believe her in the journey and just keep walking it, you know?
That's fantastic. You have mentioned so many things that I want to dive in and ask you a little bit more about. But we got to squeeze in a quick break here. So let's do that. When we come back, we've got more on tap with Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois from Duck Camp Dinners. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. Buckle up if you're on the road, especially. Buckle up if you're listening from home. Josh stood up during the commercial break, so I don't know what we're in for in this break, in this segment. But
no one knows. No one knows, Mr. Maples.
I feel like we just had a massive shift of energy in the studio here.
I'm here to bring the smoke.
I don't want the smoke. You know?
Yeah, boy.
Let's go. This is the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, our boy Goldfish, as well as Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois from Duck Camp Dinners with us on the phone line from Florida.
From all places.
Of all places. Hey, have you guys heard what's going on in Florida?
Just the Gators? Yeah, they're awesome.
Here. No.
They play Miami on Saturday.
No.
Should be heat. I'm hoping Billy Napier steps into his because he's not, let's call it, he ain't going to have a job if he doesn't. I'm hoping his vision comes to reality this year.
Did you watch the Florida State game last week?
I did, and it was awesome. It was. It brought me great joy.
Me too. It hit on my picks.
I felt like if this is how the season's starting off for me as a human, this is looking pretty good.
Goldfish, I heard you make your picks last week on the franchise.
Yeah, I feel like I did terrible because I got in my head because I was on right before Lauren Chamberlain and Coach Mosier.
Oh, that's close.
And
yeah,
so I was like, why are they calling me right now? Like, I don't deserve this.
Hey,
and so
yeah,
I was like in my head, so I didn't do as well as I thought.
Why
I was
have
going
I
to.
Never been called? Do they even know I? Does anyone even know I work here?
No, man. You come with your zombie preparedness truck, and I think you freak everybody out. Like, they just steer
like,
clear of that guy.
They're like the apocalypse truck. Nope. Yeah. Ain't talking to that
Not
guy.
Not talking to that
they
guy.
They just assume I don't know anything about sports, I think.
Well,
they're like, oh, that's that weird outdoor guy.
Then you just come barging into my one-on-one meetings every
Shut
week.
Shut your door. Okay. I don't know who leaves a door open when they're having meetings. An open door suggests, come on in, at least where I'm from. In Taylor's world, it's, I'm having a serious meeting. If you enter, I'll give you dirty looks.
Everybody else that actually works in this building pokes their head around the corner to see if people are in my office.
That's even more awkward.
This is going downhill quickly.
And this is what
yeah,
we
were... I think I see why y'all go over the overtime sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Chef. You see the problem here? We don't listen, man. There's too many chefs in the kitchen, you know. Okay. So hey, not enough line cooks, you know.
I'm with whoever was hating on Florida State. I'm not a big Florida State like hater, but I thought it was funny because now, like you said, I live in Florida now, and my next door neighbor is a huge Florida State fan.
Watch out for him. Probably try to steal your stuff.
But he had that Florida State flag flying on the front of his house. And I noticed it, and I didn't even know Georgia Tech and Florida State were playing. But then I saw the recap on SportsCenter the next day, and I was like, "Ooh, that stings." The next day, I'm out in my front yard, and I see him like begrudgingly pull that Florida State flag out from the holder, pop that American flag back in. He's like, "Here we go, oh glory, we're back with you." Moving on from Florida State, and I felt for him. I've seen as a Tiger fan, I felt those losses more than actually a couple years ago against the Aggies, or was last year against.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness,
that stings.
I was there at the game. My wife's an Aggie grad. All her family's Aggie grads. They did the whole saw the horn dance and everything, and I had to do it. It sent chills down my spine. But
you puked a little bit, I'm sure. Hey, I'm gonna send you some Florida. University of Florida flag. I know you're an LSU guy, but I'm going to send you some flags just so that you can randomly put them up outside your house just to piss your neighbor off because that's the right and true thing to do when in Florida. I don't want you getting hated by everyone. Word gets out you're a Louisiana fan, you know? I mean, an LSU
fan.
Man.
I keep my head down. I'm one of those people that like to work in quiet – and like quiet chaos, if you will. Try not to.
Welcome to my life with Taylor Maples. You know, quiet chaos. You know,
OU plays in Baton Rouge this year for the first time.
They do, and it is right after my Venice, Louisiana trip.
Oh,
and I'm kind of thinking about figuring out how to maybe stick around for a couple of days, but it's the weekend after Thanksgiving, and that means I would miss Thanksgiving, and then, you know, I'd be in deep trouble, so I guess I probably won't do that.
So I was asking if you knew what was going on in Florida, if you recall. Have you seen this?
I answered appropriately.
Have you seen there's a group that was pushing to get some like state park land?
Yeah, they were trying to turn it into a golf course.
Yeah. It got withdrawn. Withdrawn.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks to Captains for Clean Water and guys from like Mangrove and a bunch of other players that were stepping up to the plate and bringing awareness to it. But yeah, man, another win for the land.
I think the first place I saw it was Ryan Callahan, friend of the show, Ryan Callahan.
Yeah, old Cal.
Had posted something about it. So, anyways.
I think today or yesterday, the Dust Bowl Mule Deer film comes out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday it comes out.
Yesterday it came out.
Would you sit down? We do much better radio when you're sitting down, and no. I'm a lot less intimidated.
Yep, it's a power move. welcome to the Thunderdome.
Why don't we
drive this choo-choo train back into a duck blind somewhere in the Delta and learn some more things from our awesome guest who's cooler than either one of us.
Well, Chef, I was thinking during the commercial break, you talked about, you know, spending more money on music for the episodes than maybe one might advise. And it's just cool to talk to people that care about the craftsmanship of their work in the creative space today, because I feel like we live in a world where so many people are just getting by on content for content's sake. How intentional really are you with that finished product? And I know that you're more on the cooking, the hunting, that side, but you know, it just seems like you guys are in a unique class of people that are striving for authenticity with what you're producing.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel and I are highly collaborative in the post-production of it. Daniel is the genius that can get all that 30 terabytes of footage in one season into a digestible format. There's obviously a lot of technical skill that comes with what he does. But, you know, we both are very much on the same page about how we want the show to make a viewer feel during it and after it and so on. And music has always been one of those things, whether I'm watching something like Seinfeld with that little beat that they do during Seinfeld, to even like big scores and high production films and so on. I've always admired and noticed what music can do and does do for especially video format things. And so when we were creating Duck Camp Dinners, it was important for me that if this was going to be a show based in Louisiana, maybe permanently in Louisiana, maybe not, but at least for these first three seasons, that it tastes like Louisiana, it looks like Louisiana, it sounds like Louisiana, and part of sounding like Louisiana meant getting Louisiana artists involved in the show as much as humanly possible. And that's from singer-songwriters to bands that only speak French, to Grammy Award-winning folks, to Blues Hall of Fame people, to like Chris Thomas King, who's won Grammys and has a lineage of family members in the Blues Hall of Fame, and I think maybe even himself. He has a couple songs throughout the season. So, and then also singer-songwriters that play pickup music at different restaurants, you know, like we've hired them to sing and in studio and put a song together. So just those are the things that if you're in Louisiana, those are the sounds of Louisiana. If you're traveling from no matter where, those are the things you can expect to hear. And so it was important that in the show, you expect the same things. And we try to, you know, I have a Louisiana videographer and a photographer with me when we're shooting in Louisiana, because their eye on the state makes me like it brings that same perspective to it. It just feels more true in that sense in a lot of ways. So anyways, like I don't think any detail is too small. Now, sometimes you just run out of time, you know, you can tinker and edit and splice and do all those things. But sometimes, you know, you have deadlines to meet. You got to put the video out. And that's more times than none what we run up against, is just constantly making sure that whatever we're doing in the edit, in the voiceover, in the music, in the photo, in the video, that we're always representing an authentic voice to those people. The biggest compliment I've ever gotten about Duck Camp Dinners is that you make this show makes Louisianians proud to be from Louisiana. That's the absolute biggest compliment I can get. And no matter where we shoot, that's the goal. Whether it's Louisiana, whether it's another place down the road, we want to make sure that we make those people proud that this piece of content got shot there, because it authentically portrays a culture, a food ways, a lifestyle, whatever it is. It's our North Star, man, in every single way. Like, being authentic can't just be siloed into one idea, in my opinion. It has to cover the spectrum of what it takes to put into that idea. And then that's why the music has been such a cornerstone of what we do. If you watch season three, we have a different Louisiana musician. Delta Phonic is a band out of New Orleans, and that's who our intro song. Listen to the song, and like that outro from episode 2 of season 3 that just dropped last night, it was one of my favorite parts of the first 2 episodes so far, is like that cap on the cooking, how that music gets folded into the outro and what Daniel does with that. And it makes you leave in that show feeling good and like positive. And it's kind of how I operate with any conversation. I try to operate. I'm not perfect with any conversation I have, with any type of business I have, with any type of post on Instagram that I have, or with a piece of content like this, is make the people who are watching this show feel better after the show than they did when they started. And that applies, in my opinion, that's the golden rule of just like being a human. If you can succeed at that, in a restaurant and hospitality, having that person leave your restaurant happier than when they did when they came in, that you succeeded. If you can do that with a video like Duck Camp Dinners, if that show brings some light, some life, some positive vibes into your life, into your living room, to your dinner table, to the conversation with your family, then we've succeeded, right? And so, but I think you get that by taking it seriously, looking at the details, being authentic as possible, having the right brands that support you because they believe it's the right kind of content and not just fast, high intensity, forget about it after 15 minutes type of stuff that we're inundated with. Be the other side of the scale when it's so tipped to this fast content kind of idea. Be the other side of the scale where you can produce things that people can lean into and soak into and take tangible advice and recipes and entertainment from. And that's, again, like that's all because of the intensity that we go about in thinking about this show. It's completely unscripted in order, but it takes an intense effort to get there at the pre-production and in the post-production. That's how you just let it all fly during the actual production, that you're really thinking through all these different aspects.
We should probably dive in and talk a little more about food since we got a chef on this week. But first, we got to squeeze in one last break here. So stay with us. On the other side, we're going to chat more with Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois. I always enjoy talking to guys who love cooking with wild game, especially. I'm curious to hear what some of your favorite recipes are and if you have any advice to help me step up my own chef status, even if it's just in the Maples household here. So one more break, and we'll have more from the Outdoor Hour after this.
Now back to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor. Our final segment this week with Chef J.P. Bourgeois, Jean-Paul. Man, first of all, you've probably got the coolest name of anybody we've had on this show.
I know, Kirk Kuklinski's pretty awesome.
That's true. Kirk Kuklinski might have something to say about it.
I mean, it depends what you're into. You know, are you into hockey players or are you into, like, you know, OG South, you know? Like...
Hey, we've been talking about Louisiana. I know you've got a trip coming up in the next couple of months down to Venice, Louisiana. Shout out to the guys over at JD Adams and Company for always having cool trips going on. I know there's a crew going to Alaska. I know something about a South America trip on the horizon. Whether you're looking to get engaged with the fly fishing community on something of that scale, or you're just trying to go pick up some new poncho shirts like the one I'm wearing, or a Howler Brothers, or any of these awesome new soft good brands that you guys are carrying, go check out JD Adams and Company. They're on the northwest corner of 122nd and North May Avenue here in Oklahoma City. They are the fly shop for the Oklahoma region, and you're going to have a great time. They've always got drinks hanging out for you, lots of good conversation, lots of new products to kind of test and play with. And it is, if you've listened to the show, you know I'm always talking, it's one of my favorite places to avoid work during the week. So get on over to JD Adams and Company. We all need those, right, JP? You need somewhere you can pretend you're going on like a business call and just go hang out and talk fishing with the boys.
I 100% agree. But, you know, that's just look, mental health these days, boys, like, you got to have your places. You got to have your place you can just duck off 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 1 hour, whatever. Like, get your head right, get your center, get back to work.
Yeah. For me, it usually turns into, like, 2 hours and then headed home early. But, yeah. Hey, we just got a few more minutes with you here. And you were telling me during the break, and I think this is cool, your story, if you would, just in a couple of minutes, of how you went through school, and a little bit on your training as a chef. But I also thought it was really cool you were telling me that your dad had a little bit of a background in radio.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went to the Chef John Falls Culinary Institute at Nicholls State University, which happens to be in my hometown of Thibodaux, Louisiana. It's one of, you know, there's not a whole lot of culinary degrees that you can get in public universities. And this happens to be one of the best culinary schools, period, in the whole United States, where a lot of them are private programs where you're going to pay a whole lot more for. So I was just really fortunate to have that opportunity, it be in-state. But also, I think it says a lot about a culinary school of that nature, of that caliber, existing in Louisiana, one of the epicenters of American cuisine, is in the portion of Louisiana, you know, right around I-10 in South Louisiana. And I think the fact that they have a great culinary school program in that region is not on accident, if you know what I mean. So, you know, that was at Nicholls. And like I was telling you, my dad did a lot of work in radio over in college. He was back when Louisiana was in the Little League World Series, when I was playing ball a lot. I never went to the Little League World Series. I wasn't that good, but he was the color commentator for those teams. He's always enjoyed being radio. He definitely has a radio voice. And you know, I wasn't really around for those years in his life, but somehow I received that interest, if you will. Maybe some would call it a talent, but definitely an interest into radio and just speaking live and with candor, which is exactly why I like the voiceover portion of Duck Camp Dinners.
I want to talk about the eating part of Duck Camp Dinners. Give me a couple of recipes. What are some of your go-to things?
Man, there's a couple recipes that come to mind on the first season. The duck à l'orange recipe is one that I still make every year. It's basically a slow cook of duck and satsuma mandarins, which is local to Louisiana. You can use oranges. I would recommend using seedless ones. But check out season one, that recipe, duck à l'orange. It's actually, I believe Meat Eater still has the recipe up on their website. You can find it in other different places. But it's really one of those kind of epic camp meals that take two things that are in season at the same time, ducks and citrus in Louisiana, and put them in one pot. And it's a really great dish. Love that one. Speckle belly boudin is another great recipe. I make boudin regularly for myself, for my family. On the show, I've made it with two dozen different species of wild game over the course of my career, and it's been a really, I mean, I feel like boudin is one of those darlings of Cajun food that you see a lot of, like, kind of media hype, food hype around these days. So I love making, I love teaching people how to make it, and I really think if no matter what your pursuit is, mule deer or even like fish for that matter, for those fly fishermen who are keeping their catch, you can make boudin out of anything. So that's one. That's another big one that I like to really enforce in people to make. Freezes well, holds well, all that good stuff.
You know, one of my favorites the last couple of years that I've been looking forward to is I've been making a deer flank rouladen, and you know, typically a cut that people aren't excited to use, and it's something that I've really started looking forward to, with a good kind of stone ground mustard and some jalapenos and rolling it all up and slow cooking it. Man, that's, I love things like that that will take either game species that may be really fun to hunt but maybe not as fun to eat oftentimes, and I would put ducks and geese in that category personally, or just cuts of meat from other game animals that maybe are throwaways at times for people, and come up with things that are just enjoyable. Do you have like a sneaky recipe that, whether it's a game species or a cut of meat from something, that you feel like, man, this is something most people normally don't have any interest in, but I've got a secret to make that one of their favorites? Is there kind of like a sneaker recipe on your radar?
Well, I mean, the one that comes automatically to mind right now is one of those recipes that I thought was 100% normal within the kind of the conversation around wild game cooking in America. And this is me growing up as a Louisianan before I really traveled other places. But that's the eating of poudou, or is what most people call coot, around the country. And Louisianans are kind of famous for not just eating them, but being excited about going hunt coot, or what we call poudou or poudou, which translates basically into water chickens. And that we grew up normally, regularly shooting them, harvesting them, and eating them. In fact, we still have some old-timers in our hometown of Thibodaux and Houma that when we go duck hunting, they say, you know, when y'all go shoot some ducks, y'all can keep the ducks, but can you bring me back 10 poudou? And it's oftentimes, especially with the older generations, kind of thought of as this the game that they wanted. And I'm in that category. I absolutely love eating them. When we shoot them in the freshwater marshes of Louisiana, maybe that has something to do with it. You know, as I know, being a big game hunter, that, you know, so what you eat matters, whether it's humans or animals. And so sometimes maybe they get a bad rep in other parts of the country because of their diet. But in Louisiana, we consider them perfectly good for the pot. And one of those things that's probably sustained hunters for generations and generations, when there was maybe duck shortages or couldn't shoot ducks, they go after poudou to feed their family, put dinner on the table.
Man, that's wild. That is one duck that I have never heard of anybody shooting or eating. So you're right. I grew up out west. I'm from Colorado and Idaho originally. But no, man, that's fascinating to me. What do you do with it? Is it different, like how you prepare it, than what you would do with, you know, a wood duck or a mallard or one of those?
Yeah, I mean, certainly different. So you would mostly skin these birds and just use the breasts for the most part. They also have great gizzards, much like double the size of a duck gizzard. So if you're into, like, you know, like a lot of people love the gizzards, I think, no matter where you come from, especially if they're clean and prepared right, and poudou or coots have great gizzards. But we would skin them, use the breast or breast and breastplate attached, you know, easily done in a gumbo or fricassee or sauce piquant. Those are the kind of like classic Louisiana Cajun stews and sauces. I often say that Louisiana food, Cajun cooking, like really rustic Cajun cooking, not the New Orleans cooking, which is different, but like true Cajun cooking is the great equalizer of wild game, meaning that you can take those maybe a little more gnarly bits, maybe those real tougher bits, maybe those bits that need a little more time and love, and cook them in a fashion of a Cajun dish, like a fricassee, like an etouffee, a sauce piquant, a coubillon. You know, that's where you get those big nasty red drum or big redfish. They'll make redfish coubillon with, because they need time to cook. They maybe, you know, have a little more blood running through them and so on, so they'll make them into a coubillon. Something y'all might want to experiment when y'all go down to Venice. So
I think you just really got to come with us to Venice, Chef.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah. We just go ahead and show on up.
It's definitely one of those cuisines that have, and it's maybe a lot like barbecue in Texas. Like barbecue, historically, through the early days of documenting barbecue, people like Daniel Vaughn can talk to you far beyond I can about this, but they were parts of the cow that really, like, the big house wasn't using, you know? And so they were handed down to some of the family, some of the field workers, some of the slaves, however that got divvied up. And that's how barbecue kind of came to be in America. And it's the same in Louisiana and Cajun cooking. The French, the the rural French and Louisianians of the old days in the 1850s and the late 1800s were poor and were really a lot of times thought, you know, less of culturally because the Spanish and the English kind of ran this kind of upper class, ruling class of Louisiana. And the French were pushed down to the bottom of the totem pole, probably right above slaves, really, to be honest with you. And so all that food got mixed in, all those parts that typically weren't used and different kind of like paella, like jambalaya is like a poor man's paella. It comes from that. Gumbos, which gumbo translates into okra from different dialects of African. So like it all kind of was working class food that needed those type of parts. So like wild game in a lot of ways fell into that category. It was people living off the land, and then they just started injecting that game and those proteins into these dishes that started farming in South Louisiana that were very unique to that place regionally. So I know that was a lot probably deeper than you wanted to go there, but my mind and my mouth can't help but to really tell the story fully with giving it context.
No, we love that, Chef. I'll tell you this, man. We got to get you plugged in somehow to an episode of True South on the SEC Network, man, with old John over there, and let you two masterminds of story and culture come together and shine a bright light on Louisiana.
You know, yeah, I love John T. Edge. I love True South. I've been a fan of John T. for a while. We know each other, and he. Every now and then I'll send him a text after I'm watching a True South show, and I was like, man, I'm really, like, proud that you're doing this, you know, and he'll text me after some episodes of Duck Camp Dinners and just say, well done. You're doing a great thing for Louisiana and for the people of your culture. And I, like, coming from him, that's a compliment coming from a legit Southern food historian.
Well,
know?
and not just that. I mean, just an incredible writer, an incredible documenter of American history and culture. You know, like you, I'm sure there was a big void in my heart when Anthony Bourdain passed, and you know, I appreciated. I've kind of been leaning a lot more into John T. Since that time period because he's really filled that void for me of connecting the importance of food and regionality and cultures together in one. And always think about you when I watch his show. So I'm glad you guys are connected. And hopefully one of these days we'll see you together. That would just be unbelievable. What do you got,
yeah,
mates?
I mean, that would be a landmark moment for me to be able to work with John T in that way. But yeah, I feel you on the Anthony Bourdain thing. He's a big inspiration around Duck Camp Dinners and the type of story and the way we want people to feel, you know, when they watch it and after they watch it and so on. But really a interesting parallel you draw with John T, and I think you're spot on.
All right. Well, we are pressed for time here, but I want to make sure you have a chance to connect any of our listeners with your social media feeds or anything like that. Do you have websites, social handles, anything like that for yourself, the show, anything you want to present?
Yeah. So first of all, for all those who have watched it, thank you. Your view, your comments, your shares, they matter. That's what helps us show value to our partners that help fund this show. So if you wanted to continue going like I do, share it, like it, comment, tell your friend and coworker about it, and just thank you. For those who haven't seen it, look, you can catch little tidbits from here and there and a little bit of my life on my Instagram. That's Chef Jean, J-E-A-N underscore Paul. You can check out the Duck Camp Dinners Instagram account. It's airing right now on Waypoint TV season 1, 2, and 3. It's also going to be on Split Reed YouTube channel season 1, 2, and 3. And I also would like to say, for those more interested in Louisiana cooking, you know, the stand and stir, very kind of entertaining but recipe-driven Louisiana cooking content, go check out the Louisiana Cooking YouTube channel. I have a bunch of different recipes on there, from really classic stuff to mama stuff to baking to sauces and so on. And I'm going to keep putting that style of Louisiana cooking videos in on that YouTube channel. So if you're interested in that, that's something that, that you kind of get attracted to. You can check out authentic recipes on there. But really, I'm just, you know, I hope y'all go watch it. I think that when you watch it, there's something for you there, whether it's the environmental side of it, the cooking side of it, the music, the hunting. And we really try to tell that story through, you know, multiple different pillars like that. So hopefully you find some interest in that. But really, thank you to you guys for giving me an opportunity to talk about myself, which unfortunately I've gotten pretty good about. And I try to stay humble, but it seems to be like it's interesting as somebody who says, you know, I'm so interested in other people's story that when I get it to come on like this and actually tell mine from my point of view, I'm always really appreciative and honored to be able to do that. So thank you guys for that.
Well, we appreciate you joining us and sharing a little bit about your story. It's never enough time. We'll have to have you on again sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you for all those that are listening again. And thank you, team, for having me on. And look, maybe we got a little cooking segment that comes on once a week, once a month. A little food segment, a Q&A for the chef, if you will.
I love it.
If y'all want to dive into some more stuff.
I love it. Let's chat about it. This is Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois from Duck Camp Dinners. Thanks for joining us on this week's show. On behalf of Joshua Wildman Stratton, you can find him on social media at @against_current. I am Taylor Maples at @T_Maples on social media. You can always follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @Outdoor_Hour. On behalf of Maddie Goldfish and our good friend Dave Myrick, who always keeps us on the air, this is the Outdoor Hour. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.